Okay, saw people now, yeah. Here we go. Okay. So, yeah, let's get started here. It's about time. Welcome to week six, and good to see you. We are hopefully wrapping up the first chapter and also starting on the second one today. That's where I'd like to go with this. So once again, I thank Dana and Ilan Rubinstein for dedicating the year's classes on Megillot. By the way, if we're on watching a calendar and hoping to finish this by Shavuot, I am hoping to also. Hope is a wonderful thing. In any case, last time. I'm sorry.
Did she tell you?
No, that's Thursday.
Thursday.
Yeah. No problem, Susan. So, okay. So last time, at the end of class last time, we talked about Naomi refusing Ruth and Orpah and what that is about. What's the why does Naomi refuse them? And we showed that she refuses them three times. And Joyce had suggested that maybe she refuses them for practical reasons. She doesn't want to be responsible for them. So that was one idea. I showed that the Malbim has something which is a little bit close to where Joyce is going with that. He says that she refuses them out of mercy for them. At first, she only thinks that they're planning to accompany her back to Israel, and then they're going to go back to Moab, and she says there's no need. Then they say, no, we want to go La'amech. We want to go live with you amongst the Jews. And Naomi says, no one's going to marry you. And as far as me, you know, yes, my son's married you, but I'm not producing anymore. So that's not an option. And then Orpah says, all right, fine, and leaves. But Ruth says, I'm staying anyway. And Ruth adds, I'm going to go to your nation, but also your God is my God. And at that point, Naomi backs down. So Malbim's approach was that Naomi was refusing them out of mercy. Then we brought the Gemara, and this, Devi, is the where your question becomes relevant, and Susan, your email as well. The Gemara says the reason why she refuses is that she understands that they want to convert. Not like Malbim, who says that the conversion only emerges over the course of the dialogue, but rather that it was understood. Naomi knew that they wanted to convert, and that this was an attempt to refuse them because that's what you're supposed to do when somebody comes to convert. You have to determine their sincerity. Now, the Gemara itself only says that we refuse, like Naomi did, in order to determine sincerity. The Gemara does not say you have to refuse three times. The Rambam does not say it. The Shulchan Aruch does not say it. There is no magic number of three times. It is true, and this, Susan, is what you had sent me, that the Medrash in Rut Rabbah does say that we refuse three times to parallel the Naomi's refusal, and it's a good medrash, but it's not taken as halacha. And it's difficult to fit it into the text, because Malbim really seems to be correct that there's no reason for Naomi to think at the outset that this is about conversion at all. That really doesn't seem to be the focus. So yes, we do discourage in order to determine sincerity. For some people, discouraging once is enough, because it's very clear that they're sincere. And for some people, three times is not enough. It really depends on the person and depends on the situation. But there is no magic three, out of this. And then the last view that we noted, and this is what I wanted to pick up with, and, Dr. Yael Ziegler really likes this idea, is that Naomi didn't want them. Naomi doesn't want them, and for a couple of reasons. Number one, we said, because they caused the death of Mahlon and Kilion. When Naomi says, Marli Mikem, it's bitter to me because of you. And we brought it, if you look on your sheet, in source number one, I reproduced it from last week's sheet, the Zohar Chadash, it has the word tsar instead of mar in the text. That seems to just be a typo in the manuscript that I have. But she says, it's bitter for me because of you, because you caused Mahlon and Kilion to die. Why in the world would I want you to come back with me to Israel? That's one reason she would refuse them. The other reason she would refuse is because they would be an embarrassment to her. She needs to come back to Beit Lechem trailing her two Moabite daughters-in-law. That's not something that she's at all interested in doing. And Dr. Ziegler brought from Midrash in Rutzuta to support that in source number two. Here, though, I wanted to just do one last point on this, which Dr. Ziegler suggests. I'm not convinced, but I hear her point, and I think it's worth noting. Take a look in chapter 1 in the text, after Ruth gives her speech, right? The big dramatic speech, which we're going to be examining shortly. Okay, whither thou goest, where you lie down, your nation is my nation, your God is my God, where you die I will, and so on, right? How does Naomi react to this speech? She stops talking. What would you have expected the reaction to be?
To keep up the relationship.
Well, I mean, she does stay. They do stay. Sorry, what, Susan?
Acceptance, warmth.
Acceptance, warmth,
a hug.
Yeah, I mean, you would have expected something. So look at source number 3 on your sheet. Dr. Ziegler has an article called Al Chamot Vekalot on mothers-in-law and daughters-in-law. And just reading my translation in the interests of time, the possibility that Naomi really and truly did not want her daughters-in-law to return with her is supported by Naomi's reply to Ruth's declaration of loyalty, which demonstrated that she would remain with her mother-in-law at any price. Naomi did not hug Ruth. She did not put forth words of chesed or support. She was actually silent in the face of Ruth's dramatic declaration of loyalty. The text points out, Vatechdal, she ceased speaking to her. The root, chet dalid lamid, Vatechdal, refers to an intentional action from Naomi, cutting off communication. Naomi is not happy that Ruth is insisting on returning. So you've heard Dr. Ziegler make this point. You see the basis for it in the text. What's the problem? Why is this a difficult... Yeah, Janine.
Well, later on, she calls it BT. It sounds like...
Yeah. The whole rest of the story doesn't fit well with it. Right? That's my problem. I think it's a very interesting idea. I think it has a lot to recommend it. But I do have to wonder, then, how do you explain the fact that afterwards they get along great? Susan and then Moish.
Well, to me, it looks like more of a shock. Like, okay, you really want to convert? You really want to come? I got to think about this for a minute. So it's sort of like, try pulling back for a minute. Let me decide. Yeah, I like you. You're a good daughter-in-law. I'm going to accept you. It's sort of like, you know, with your, I remember we had a date very long ago. When we came home to tell his parents we were engaged, my mother-in-law said nothing. She just sat there in total shock. And then after, she sort of came back because she wasn't expecting it. So I look at it, maybe it's the same thing.
Maybe. I can't prove otherwise. Maybe. Yes, Moish.
I think the answer is obvious, and I don't think that Ms. Seliger is correct. I mean, obviously all these other answers are of value, but there's one word here that keeps getting repeated. I can't even remember how many times, somewhere between 5 and 10, and that is the word Ra. And including to the extent God has caused her Ra, depending, of course, on how you translate it. And, you know, today everybody would know exactly what she's talking about. She is depressed. She's depressed to the full extent. She's suffering mental illness. She is not responsible for anything that she says, and there's nothing to be taken from it other than, you know, we hope you'll get better. But she is just totally depressed beyond anything.
So the idea that she's depressed, I think the idea that she's depressed has a lot of merit to it. She certainly has a lot of reason to be depressed. Expecting someone to have the resiliency to cope with this would be set, you know, a real stretch to expect that. Having said that, we still, I see you, Joyce, and I see you, Rose. That doesn't mean that we don't need to understand what her motivation was. In other words, it doesn't dismiss what she said. It just means that it may be influenced by, you know, inability to deal with the situation. I still want to know her motivation.
But that's the understanding of Tefdalagabirileha. That's classic depression mental illness. We can't speak. There's no intention. There's no anything to be said about it other than, I can't. I just can't.
So you're talking about specifically reading it to Vatechdal. I hear that. I hear the idea at any rate. I mean, I'm a big believer in the Goldwater rule. You don't diagnose somebody you've never met. But I understand where you're coming from. Okay, Joyce has been waiting, and then Rose, and then Janine.
So there's a lot of kissing from Oprah and Naomi before Naomi says what she says.
Yes.
So I think that's an indication that Naomi likes the girls.
I definitely hear it. Unless you were to say she was being polite, but no, I definitely hear that there does seem to be within this story significant expression of affection. I tend to agree with you, Rose.
Sorry,
you're unmuted.
Oh, am I? Sorry. Okay. Yep. So all I want to say is she's obviously depressed, but she had a lot to say for herself before this. So suddenly she became silent. It doesn't make sense. It's like Aaron. Aaron was silent when his son's kids died. But if you keep, he was always quiet. This is somebody who had so much to say, and then suddenly she became silent. It doesn't fit.
I hear that also. So far there are a lot of votes against this, this last approach. And Janine, you were gonna say?
I just want to say the word tadaber. We've learned that tadaber is a harsher.
We're stronger, topic. Yeah.
And by Tefdal, it almost sounds like she stopped trying to convince her. Yeah, I understand what Yael Ziegler is saying, but it's just as easy to understand this, that she stopped trying to drive her away.
Yes. No, I agreed. Okay. So I don't feel bad that I'm not into the idea. All right. So that brings me to the last part of our discussion of this chapter. Because you can't learn this chapter without looking at Ruth's actual dramatic declaration. Specifically, what I want to look at, well, take a look. Take a look. Sentences 16 and 17, please. That's where it is. Ruth says, "Al tifki'i vi le'ozveich lashuv me'acharayich." Right? Don't push me to leave you, to go back. Ki al asher telechi eleich. Right? I'm going to use regular English. Where you go, I will go. Uva asher talini alin. Where you lie down, meaning where you rest. Right? Like a malon, place to stay. Where you stay, I will stay. Ameich ami. Your nation is my nation. Velokayach elokai, and your God is my God. Basher tamusi amus, where you die, so will I. Visham ekaver, and there I will be buried. Ko yaseh Hashem li v'cho yosif. This is an expression of an oath. So may God do to me. It's the equivalent in English of so help me, right? That's the kind of phrase this is. Ki amaves yafrid beini uveinech. Only death is going to split us up. I'm not going anywhere except with you. So the challenge that I have with this is, why did Ruth choose to mention these things specifically? In other words, I understand your nation is my nation, your God is my God. Why did she choose to mention death? What was that about? What's that doing there? So before we get to that, I just want to make a preliminary point. Something else that I think is worth thinking about. Jump ahead to chapter 2, sentence 11, please. This is when Boaz meets Ruth out in the fields, and he says that he's instructed his crew to take care of her. No one's going to hurt her, and so on. Something we have to come back to. But look at what Boaz says to her. He says, "Hugeid hugadli kol asher asis es chamosech." I've been told everything you did for your mother-in-law, acharei mosi sheikh, after your husband passed. Vata'azvi avich ve'imech ve'eretz moladetech. You abandoned your father, you abandoned your mother, you abandoned your homeland. Vatelechi al am asher lo yada'at t'mol shilshom, and you went to a nation you didn't even know a few days beforehand. Tell me something. What does Boaz think is Ruth's motivation for coming to Israel? What does Boaz think is driving Ruth?
She has no family. She left.
No, but but what's her motivation in coming to Israel as far as Boaz is concerned?
It's the love for Naomi.
The love for Naomi, not conversion to Judaism. Right? It's not about accepting Judaism. It's you decided that you were going to abandon your land to go take care of Naomi. Ruth, you are a wonderful Baalat Chesed. You are a person of true kindness. And the truth is, you can find that in Ruth's speech when she says, only death will separate us. Right? She's making a statement that she is attaching herself to Naomi. But what does that do to the idea that she's converting to Judaism here? If she's converting to Judaism, then her motivation is accepting God, not taking care of Naomi. Brona, you're going to say? You have to unmute.
What troubles me is, Ruth doesn't say, your people will be my people. She says, your people are my people, which makes me think that maybe she had converted.
Right. So I go back to the previous discussions that we've had on this, and there are views that she had already converted. Whether as a full conversion or whether it was something done just to satisfy marriage with Mahlon and Kilion, but we did have such a view. But I could defend the read that it's simply a statement to Naomi, you keep pushing me away, your nation is my nation, stop pushing me away. In other words, it doesn't have to mean that she had already converted. I could read it the way you are, but I don't think you have to. Susan and then Janine.
I'm wondering why they have to be against each other.
What do you mean?
Why can't she do both? Why can't she be loyal to Hashem and loyal to Naomi? Why does it have to be either or?
And maybe that's the answer. Maybe the answer really is that, you know, people are complicated, and she is doing two different things. Yes, she is taking care of Naomi, and yes, she's converting to Judaism. I just think it's interesting to see that you have both, and I see you, Jean, just hanging in there. If you take a look on the sheet...
Can I just finish what I was going to say?
Okay.
It comes to the word of abandon.
Yeah.
Because she's not going to if I say I'm going to be with you till death, it's also I'm never going to abandon you.
Right.
And with that as an underlying, I'm never going to abandon your thought.
It can be read, but again, don't think it has to. But take a look on the sheet at source number 4. Because the Medrash in Rut Rabba chooses to read Boaz's statement indeed as both. Not only as taking care of Naomi, but also a matter of abandoning idolatry. When Boaz says, you left your father and mother, v'tazvi, avich v'imeich, so the Medrash in number 4 says, what does that mean? Me'avodat kochavim shalach. Your idolatry. Why? Because he quotes you a pasuk in Yirmiyahu, which talks about people who worship wood and stone, calling it their father, calling it their mother. So Boaz is acknowledging the conversion, separate from acknowledging her kindness to Naomi. In other words, both elements are here. It's not one or the other. Yes, Janine and then Dahlia. Right, so Malbim grabs that.
Oh, and the other thing is that, you know, it says, Vasher Tamut Yamut Visham Akaber. People often, not always, and it depends on, you know, whatever, all sorts of circumstances, but people often
do decide to be buried in Israel because they feel that's really where they belong, that's where their heart is. I think her deciding to be buried with her mother-in-law is not just her mother-in-law. It's an acceptance of a new kind of life, a new kind of religion.
So that's possible, but the way she words her comment about burial is specifically where you are. You know, where you die, that's where I will, and there I will be buried. It's a function of the attachment, is really the way it sounds to me.
But it's not going to be Moab, where her family
yes,
is, or where her
that's
father
true.
Is buried. She has maybe royal burial grounds there.
Right.
She's saying her lot in with her mother-in-law's nation.
Right.
Place,
okay. Dahlia.
I think you have to really think about why she has this attachment to Naomi in the first place. She comes from a good family, and she marries into this family, and I think Naomi must have stayed religious. Naomi may have kept a kosher home, she may have kept Shabbos, she may have been a really righteous Jew, even though her son seemed to marry.
Mm-hmm.
And this type of lifestyle was attractive. So when she said, I'm not leaving you, she could have chosen her mother. Why did she choose this, her mother-in-law, over her mother? Because Naomi set such a beautiful example of an ancient pile and of a religious Jewish woman. It was like Abraham. It was like Sarah. Everybody talks about how Sarah inspired non-Jews. How she had all these came with her because of her example. Why can't Naomi have set this beautiful example? And so she was choosing them both at the same time. I guess.
Mm-hmm. No, I think that's a beautiful idea. I mean, certainly Naomi is all that that Ruth knows as Judaism. There's nothing else that she has as a resource. You know, Elimelech dies soon after they arrive. Mahlon and Kilion certainly are not exemplars of Judaism. So Naomi is all she knows. And she is. I mean, Naomi is portrayed in the story, granted that we debated, is she responsible for them going to Moab in the first place? But fundamentally, Naomi is portrayed in the story as someone who is a person who says, I sinned, I did things that were wrong, and God is punishing me for it. This is a person of great religiosity. So I certainly see that. We have a bunch of hands still, but we also need to go further. So I'm going to take Ruchama, and then go further. Yes, Ruchama.
Okay, like it just was mentioned that actually Abraham is looked like the first convert, and Hashem told him, Lech lecha me'artzecha, u'mimoladetcha, u'mibeit avicha. This is about the same thing that the Metashriyav Avech Ve'imech Ve'eretz Moladetech Ve'elchi El Makom Shelo'edah. Abraham didn't know also where he's going when God told him Lech Lecha.
Right. It doesn't match up one-to-one, but there is definitely an association between those two. Absolutely. So in terms of why Ruth picks these, the Gemara in Yevamos, as explained by the Maharal, if you look at sources 5 and 6, says this was a formal acceptance of Judaism in which she went up, she ascended in severity of what she was accepting. I'm not going to read the Maharal aloud, although I did give you the full translation in source number 6, but I'm going to explain it as we read source number 5. So, Amrala. Asir lantchum Shabbat. The Gemara says that when Ruth says, where you go, I will go, it's because Naomi said to her, you know, Tchum Shabbos is a problem. Tchum Shabbos, or Tchum Shabbat, however you choose, is the rule that says, I'm not allowed to travel more than a certain distance outside of town on Shabbat. This has nothing to do with carrying. Whether I'm carrying or not doesn't matter. Where the residential area ends, I get an additional kilometer, and that's all I'm allowed to travel on Shabbos. It is linked to Psukim in the Torah. However, it's generally understood that this is a rabbinic prohibition. There's some debate in the Gemara about this, biblical or rabbinic, but the general assumption is that it is rabbinic. Certainly the 2,000 amma limit is rabbinic. There are those who suggest perhaps there's a 12,000 amma limit that's different, but according to the Maharal, right, you look at this and say, why in the world would she talk to her about Tchum Shabbos? Like, that's the first thing you worry about, not like, I don't know, leaving off the shrimp or something? And the answer is no. She starts out with a rabbinic prohibition specifically. This actually connects really well with a separate Gemara that I think would just confuse matters, but worth mentioning anyway. There's a pasuk in Sefer Bereishis in which Hashem says about Avraham that he observed all of my mitzvos. Mitzvotai, chukotai, v'torotai. The Gemara says, what does that mean? All the mitzvot, all the chukim, all of the torot, what is this referring to? And it says, the mitzvos, meaning Avram and Sarah keep all the mitzvos. Every one of them. But the Gemara says, even ayin tuf, which may be rendered as Erev Tchumen. In other words, they even kept Tchum, which would be a very interesting Avraham parallel to Ruth, right? If they're both involved in Tchum. Anyway, that's a side note, enough to confuse people, but that's okay. So the point here, going back to this, is the Gemara says she starts out with Tchum, says the Maharal, that's to give a rabbinic prohibition. Then, says the Gemara, Naomi says to her, Asir lan yichud, we're not allowed to be alone, meaning if you marry, then the Torah prohibits you from being alone with a man other than your husband, right? No seclusion, no isolation, no yichud. To which she says, where you lie down, I shall lie down, says the Maharal. That's a biblical prohibition. And not only is it a biblical prohibition, it's a biblical prohibition that doesn't have any penalty that a court can administer. If she is alone with a man, there's nothing a rabbinical court can do about it. It's simply a prohibition. Then, says the Gemara, still in source number 5, Naomi says, you know, we have 613 mitzvot. To which she says, I'm good with that. Your nation is my nation. So the Maharal says, the point is, there are biblical mitzvot that have penalties. So that's what she's saying is, you know, we have a lot of mitzvot for which there's a punishment if you do something wrong. She says, I'm good with that. To which Naomi's response is, yeah, but also idolatry is prohibited to us, which is considered the equivalent of all 613, as the Maharal points out. So she's escalating, and she says, well, your God is my God. To which Naomi says to her, you know, there's a death penalty for some of these things. That's pretty extreme. And she says, where you die, I will die. And then the burial one is because rabbinical courts can administer cemeteries. They do administer cemeteries for those they've executed. And by being buried there, that means that somebody will effectively still be punished in the next world. How do you like that? And she says, there I will be buried. So that was a little bit choppy. If you read it inside in sources 5 and 6, you'll see it perhaps a little bit more smoothly. But the point is that the Gemara says, is clearly bothered by this speech. What is this speech about? And it says that Naomi is trying to induce Ruth to leave in presenting to her the challenges in an increasing and escalating order of severity. These are the things you're up against if you want to convert. That's one read. Dr. Ziegler has a second approach, which requires a bit of flexibility. If you take a look at source number 7 on the sheet, I did a table here to help. She says that Ruth is responding to Naomi's different arguments. Naomi's pushing her away, and she is responding. So Naomi said to her, why would you go with me? Lama telach na'imi? So she says, asher telchi elech, where you go, I will go. Naomi said, Gam hayiti alayla leish, gam yaladati banim. Even if I would be with a man tonight, even if I would produce sons, she says, asher talini alin, where you lie down, like that lying down reference, that's where I will lie down. And so on down the line. The weakness in this read, while I think it is very creative, is just that everything is very out of order. As you can see, I gave you the pasuk numbers there in the table. I think that's hard. I think what Ruth is really doing here is something simple. And I think it's important, but I think it's really very simple. And it goes back actually to the panel discussion we had on Sunday evening for those who were there about conversion. We talked about, I referenced it and Rebbetzin Lerner referenced it also, the idea that conversion is not an instant. Conversion is a journey. I think of it a lot like actually when young couples, have a child where they go through the pregnancy and then the baby is born and they think, ah, we did it. It's like, no. That's the beginning. that's not, we did it. Or when a couple gets married, right? We went through all the dating. We found each other. We're so excited. Yeah, that, now the hard work starts. And it's true also for the conversion. The conversion may take a long time, but it's a beginning of what's then going to, God willing, extend for many, many more years. So to me, the way to read Ruth's speech is a recognition of that. She says, first of all, our current trip, where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. I'm sticking with you on this trip. Second, it's about being Jewish in Beit Lechem when we arrive there. Your nation in Beit Lechem is my nation. Your God, the things that you're going to do there, is my God. I'm going to be practicing the same thing as you. And third, it's about the ultimate fate at the end of our journey. Where you die, I will die. Meaning this is to the death. This is for the rest of my life. And that's where I'll be buried, with that identity. To me, the simple understanding of why Ruth talks about death and about burial is because she's trying to say, I'm in it for the long haul. This is a lifelong thing that I'm committing to. That to me is pshat. Okay. So recognizing that, we've spent now 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, 3.5 hours on this chapter. I gave you some review questions at the on the sheet, which we're not going to go through in depth, but quickly. What were the sons of Elimelech? What were the sins? Not the sons. We know about the sons. What were the sins of Elimelech Naomi's family? Right? So we had the idea of leaving Israel or abandoning the Jews financially or by not praying for them. We had two different approaches. Marrying non-Jews or marrying Moabites. Those were our four different ideas. Is Naomi held responsible? So she holds herself responsible. That's the way she expresses it. Most read her as not responsible, although some Midrashim do blame her for leaving Israel and for what happens with the kids and so on. Did Ruth and Arpa convert before marrying Mahlon and Kilion? So most think not, but as I said to Brona before, Ibn Ezra believes they did, and then we had a Midrash that Chana pointed out that believes that there was a weak conversion. How do we view Arpa? So from our text, she seems fine. We do have a Gemara that specifically denigrates the act with which she conceived Goliath as part of contrasting David and Ruth on the one hand and Goliath and Arpa on the other hand. Why does Naomi refuse Ruth and Arpa? Testing their sincerity for conversion is the Gemara's view. Mercy for them, the Malbim's read, or that she doesn't want them. As Dr. Ziegler suggested, whether because they caused Mahlon and Kilion's death or out of embarrassment. And then why does Ruth mention those specific acts in her conversion speech? So again, either it's increasing halachic severity as Naomi tries to push her away, or it's meant to match Naomi's refusals from before, or this is just to say her path going forward, ultimately, for the rest of her life, is what she's trying to chart and to demonstrate here. Okay. That, believe it or not, concludes chapter 1, which brings us to chapter 2. Yes, Janine. You're muted. Yeah.
It's a very, maybe a bit of a detailed question, but the different explanations
explanations of the Gemara bits of what was involved in each time. Each one has like a little hook to hang it on. You know, Yichud Tamim. The 613 mitzvah, where's the hook on that one?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. I suspect it's actually a reverse. In other words, it's because we know that when someone wants to convert and we're trying to dissuade them, we have to tell them, you know, we have all of these mitzvot. So it would be odd that that wouldn't fit into this conversation. So, Ameich Ami. Because you're right, it doesn't derive naturally from Ameich Ami. Okay. So if you take a look on your sheet, right before source number 8, I gave you the outline of chapter 2. We start out by introducing a fellow named Boaz, related to the deceased Elimelech. Boaz is described as a gibor chayil. Ruth decides she's going to go glean. She doesn't know anything about Boaz, it seems. She ends up in Boaz's field. Boaz learns that Ruth is gleaning in his fields. He promises her protection as well as support. Boaz explains his support is in response to her chesed, and I added in parentheses her conversion, because again, we said it could be read as a response to both. Boaz provides special treatment for Ruth, and Ruth reports back to Naomi that Boaz is helping out, and Naomi says, wow, that's amazing, that's wonderful, you keep going up to Boaz. So, in this chapter, Ruth is the key figure. Naomi plays a role, but the real spotlight is on Boaz. We're going to see the theme of loyalty again here in terms of the way Boaz treats Naomi through Ruth. We also get a look at the gleaning culture in Israel, which is really interesting because even though it's commanded in the Torah, this is where we actually get to see the implementation, what it looks like in practice. You know, there are so many mitzvot in the Torah which you don't see implemented in Tanakh. There's no description of how they did that. Very little for most mitzvot. But here we get a look at the implementation. Unfortunately, it's not necessarily a positive experience, as we're going to see. It's not necessarily such a good implementation. So, there are a lot of questions we could ask. Like I said to you in the beginning of the book, we're not going to answer every question any more than we did in Megillat Esther. But here are some questions that I'd like to address. Why, if there is such a fellow by the name of Boaz, who is such a good guy, he's a Gibor Chayil, why didn't Naomi send Ruth to Boaz in the first place? Right? Like, why does this have to happen accidentally? Why exactly does Boaz give Ruth special treatment? What's the motivation there? Boaz is going to warn his field workers, don't mess with Ruth. If he didn't warn them, what was going to happen? What exactly was going on in this man's fields? Hang on, I'm not looking for answers yet, I'm just asking questions. When Naomi learns that Ruth has been helped by Boaz, she says, oh, keep gleaning there. Why doesn't she actually say, go ask him to marry you? Go ask him to redeem your field? Right? She's going to eventually in chapter 3. Why isn't that her initial reaction? The one thing that we need to discuss, but it's going to wait until chapter 3, is the definition of the term Gibor Chayil. When Boaz is called Gibor Chayil, we need to understand what that means. I want to wait till chapter 3, though, because that's where Ruth is going to be called Eshet Chayil. And so I want to take on all the Chayils at once. I think it's better to lump the Chayils together. Yes, Gita.
You asked all these questions, as it were, why they didn't do this and why they didn't do that. I'm not intimately knowledgeable about courting procedures in those days, but I can imagine that it would be a good move for Ruth to accost Boaz in the fields and say, marry me. I mean, it doesn't work.
Is it better when she does it in the granary?
Well, more time has passed, at least, yeah.
Oh, so you're thinking that they need to know each other for a while.
A little bit.
Some dating should happen before she says, yeah, marry me. Maybe.
It doesn't seem that women would be doing that.
Yeah, no, and you could give that answer. I mean, I could suggest right now, off the cuff, that it's because right now is the barley harvest season, and she wants to wait till the season's over, because Boaz is a busy man. He's got a lot of distractions. Wait till after finals, and propose after finals. Right? You know, it's, there's something to be said for that.
But doesn't Plony Almoni come first?
Well, Plony Almoni should come first, but...
Yeah.
But only to the extent that Boaz is going to say, we had to get this guy out of the way. You're right. Naomi doesn't say anything about Plony Almoni.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe she knows he's no good to begin with. We'll have to talk about that. No, I'm serious about that. We're going to have to talk about that. It's a possibility that she knows who this guy is, and she knows that it's not worth her time to send Ruth to Plony Almoni. Yeah.
Doesn't that make it a difference?
I'm sorry?
Boaz is related. He's family.
So is Plony Almoni.
Oh.
Yeah. Plony Almoni's whole role in the book is that he's a relative who's not willing to help. Yes, Dahlia.
Well, I just see this whole conversion thing as a process. You said it's a lifelong thing. She just got there, okay? She has only begun to learn to live in Israel among the Jewish people. You know, before that, her only role model was Naomi. Now she is in this Jewish society. She needs to have a lifelong learning process to become a real Jew. And this is how we learn what we learn about converts and about their whole conversion process. We learn all about conversion from the story of Ruth. And so if she were to go right off the bat, before she has really lived as a Jew and the Jewish experience among Jews in Israel, in the fields, and everywhere else, it's premature.
Fair. I think it's a fair argument. We'll see. I want to talk more about it, but right now we have three good answers, right? We have the answer that they have to get to know each other. We have the answer that you're waiting until the harvest. And we have the answer that she has to live as a Jew for a period of time before she's going to be able to start looking for a shidduch. It's certainly a reasonable argument. Janine?
It's something I just noticed now. She was not sent there. It says, Vayikar Mikreha.
Correct.
It almost introduces Boaz, so we know who he is. But when Ruth went out to try to believe,
she had no idea.
She had no idea.
Yeah, no, and she comes back to Naomi and she says, yeah, I was out in the field and the fella who owns the field is some guy named Boaz. She has no idea who this guy is. Yeah, no, that's key. And not only that, I'll add it to the surprise. That verb that we use when she ends up in Boaz's field, right? Vayiker mikreha. It was a mikre. It was a coincidence. Okay. Normally, we don't like coincidences, I can speak, in Tanakh. Usually, we say nothing is a coincidence. But apparently now, it's okay. So we're going to have to talk about that. Asher karcha baderech. So, okay. First question, though, that I want to address here is, what were they doing for support until Ruth decided she was going to go glean? Right? I mean, look at the sentence. Beginning of chapter 2. First pasuk introduces Boaz. Second pasuk. Vatomer Ruth ha-Moabiyah el Naomi. Ruth the Moabite. By the way, she can't shed that adjective. Right? She converted, but she's still Ruth the Moabite. And that's the way she's going to be. So, she says to Naomi, El chana ha-sadeh, I'm going to go out to the fields. Va'ala katab ba-shibolim. And I'm going to go harvest among the sheaves. Achara sherem tachin beinav, wherever I'm going to find favor in someone's eyes. Vatomer lo lechibiti, and she says, "Go, my daughter." She's going to go be the breadwinner, so to speak. And what happened until now? Was this on day one in town? What was going on? So the Medrash in Rut Zuta, if you take a look at source 8, gives us an answer. Hayta holechet umivia bechol yom ma sheshtehen ochalot. She went and brought every day food for both of them. She, meaning Naomi. Naomi is bringing back stuff for them every day. Why is Naomi the one to do it? Shalo teitse le tarbut ra'ah. She's worried that Ruth, this, as Dahlia emphasized, new Jew, if she goes out there and starts getting involved with people, who knows what's going to happen? Better to shelter Ruth a little bit. Keep in mind, this is the era of the Shoftim. This is the period of the judges. A woman wandering around alone, not necessarily a good idea. And velote tzicha lebriot, and that way also Ruth is not going to have to deal with all the things that you have to deal with when you're out there and needing support from other people. Again, woman, stranger, alone in town, in that period of time, who knows what she's going to run into. Better, Naomi thinks, let her stay home. Keep in mind also that in chapter 4, we are going to learn that they had a field. Take a look, please. Jump ahead to chapter 4 when we get to the redemption. Chapter 4, sentence 3. Perek Dalet Pasuk Gimel. This is when Boaz gathers the elders of the town and talks to the would-be redeemer, Ploni Almoni. Vayomer la goel, he said to the redeemer, Chelkat hasadeh asher le'achinu le'elimelech. The portion of the field that belongs to our brother Elimelech. And now the next two words are really, really important. I'm curious to see how your books translate them. The portion of the field of our brother Elimelech. Susan, what do you have in the pink edition for the next words?
We're verse 3, right?
Yes.
And you said to Naomi, who has returned from the field of Moab.
Yeah, no, right before that.
Oh, and he said to the near kinsman.
Yeah.
Naomi, who has...
Oh, okay. Keep reading. Sorry.
Naomi, who has returned from the field of Moab, is selling the portion of the field that belonged to her brother, to Elimelech. Her brother, Elimelech.
Right, it's not her brother, it's our brother, Elimelech. But that's key. Is selling. It says is selling, meaning she hasn't sold it yet. When I read the Hebrew, Machra Naomi, it sounds like she already sold it. Right? Machra, she sold. Not is selling. So what exactly is going on in that sentence with that field when he talks about the field with the Redeemer? So the commentators assume that Naomi still had the field. And that what he was asking was, Naomi is putting up the field for sale, and we have a law in the Torah, it's not this week's Torah portion, it's the following week in Parshas Bahar, that says that when your brother becomes indigent and wants to sell off his ancestral property, you should buy it and return it to him. So what Boaz wants the Redeemer to do at that stage is to buy the field from Naomi in order to give it back to her. But at our point in the story, she has the field still. That's what I'm trying to get across. That's my point. When you ask the question of where did Naomi get food from for them, the answer is she had a field. She's using the field. She may not be able to use it well, but that's what she's doing. To support this idea that they still had the field, I note Rashi in source number 9. She says, Rashi is commenting here on chapter 3, when Ruth says to Boaz, I'd like you when Ruth says to Boaz, I'd like you to marry me and also let the name of Machlo not be lost from his field. So Rashi says, Chamotiva ani tzvichot limkor nachalatenu. My mother-in-law and I need to sell our portion. Ve'ata alecha liknot, and it's on you to purchase it. Knei gamoti ima, marry me at the same time. Shizacher shem hamet al nachalato, so that the name of the deceased will be mentioned with his portion. How? Kisha'avo al hasadeh, when I come to the field, yomru, zot asher machlon, zot eshet machlon. People will say, oh, that's Machlon's wife, it's Machlon's field, and therefore Machlon's name will remain. So my point is, the field is still in the family. Malbim also says it must be so, that the field has not yet been sold, because he points out a nuance in the law. The rule is, I mentioned before, that if you sell off ancestral land, the relative is supposed to redeem it. But the relative is not allowed to redeem it for the first 2 years after the sale.
Question?
Yeah, please.
I have two questions. First of all, isn't Johnny Maloney or whatever in Hebrew nowadays, like John Doe?
Yes, we'll get to that in chapter 4. You are correct.
John Doe. Nowadays, you won't say John Doe. You say that. Secondly, I don't understand the beginning of the second chapter. How is it just going to go
there and try to get him to like her?
So we're not there yet. This is something that we're not up to yet. So hang in there.
This is sentence 2. Okay.
Thank you.
Why would she assume that
we're not there yet. Right now we're dealing with the question of the field. That's all. We're not into it. We'll get to Ruth and Boaz. We're just not there yet. Janine.
The other question is, if Naomi is worried about her going out alone, why doesn't she go with her to glean?
So we'll talk about that also. Okay. Hang in there also on that one.
Okay. Well, anybody else knows?
Hang in there. Janine, what? Right, so I'm not sure that it would have been fallow the whole time, meaning I don't know what arrangements Elimelech made when he left town. Maybe it was rented out to somebody, maybe somebody had, I don't know, but it's a valid question. They've been gone for 10 years at the minimum. The answer may well be that there's something wild that's growing that she's able to take advantage of. But yeah, I don't have specifics. It's a good question.
Why doesn't Naomi go with Ruth if she's concerned about her?
Like I said, we're going to come back to it, Ricky. I'm not done with you.
Not too. Okay.
So the first approach here is that Naomi is the one doing the work, and there's no textual basis for saying that. There's nothing in the text that supports that. It's just logical. That it's logic that leads us to suggest it. However, the Malbim takes a different approach. If you take a look on your sheet at source number 11, he has a different take as to what's going on here. He thinks Naomi is not doing anything. And Moish, this may fit with your picture of Naomi's ultimate state here altogether, in terms of her mental state. It may support you in that. But take a look at Malbim in source number 11 on the sheet. Shehagam Naomi lefi onya atahaya tovla imaitam evakeshet mish'an lechem iboaz hakrovah ha'ashir. It would have been good for Naomi at this stage, being impoverished, to seek the support of bread from Boaz, her wealthy relative. However, she preferred that Ruth should go get the gleaning that the Torah licenses for her, as though this was, you know, support from God, so to speak, while she was impoverished. Those who were at the Rabbi Akiva session that I taught last night, this will ring a bell. Milifnot lekabel chesed mikrova asher haya makira be'et oshra, as opposed to looking for chesed, for kindness, from her relative who knew her back when she was wealthy. Ubosha legalot lefanav machsora, she is ashamed, she is embarrassed, so she doesn't want, number one, to appeal to Boaz, and number two, she's not doing anything. It's actually Ruth who's going to go out, but Naomi is not apparently doing anything as Malbim reads it. Clear? Two different approaches. As to why Naomi doesn't go with her, so we're gonna come back to what Naomi is doing, but just to answer you briefly, Ricky, there are sources that suggest that Ruth actually says to her, I'm gonna go, I don't want you to go. you're already older, and therefore it's not appropriate. But there are others who argue, no, it's because Naomi doesn't want to be seen. Naomi is staying home. She doesn't want to deal with everybody. Something to come back to. So we only have a few minutes. I want to start on the question of who is Boaz, but I wanted to make sure not to lose the opportunity to let you know, in case you're not aware. There's a major conference taking place May 2nd to 5th. I'm going to be teaching a class as part of the conference. It's the Health and Halacha conference run by Nishmat and Mizrahi, and I'm putting the link in the chat so you can look it up for yourself. It's really outstanding. They've put together an incredible program, and it's free. Did I mention that? I put it in the chat, healthandhalacha.com. Take a look at it, sign up for it, it should be good. My session I'm running with Yoetzet Halacha Rivka Sonnenberg on Tuesday evening, but there's such a range available. I think it really is a something for everyone type of thing. So make sure you take a look at that. Okay, in terms of Boaz and who Boaz is, you tell me. Your prior experience with Megillat Rut. Boaz, thumbs up or thumbs down? Thumbs up. I see thumbs up. I see thumbs up. Everybody's got thumbs way up. Boaz? Huh. What could be wrong? We love Boaz. We're really impressed with Boaz. And that's the standard view. He was introduced as Ish Gibor Chayil. It's almost like Tochiner. Why are you wasting our time with this? We know Ish Gibor Chayil is a positive description, whatever the specifics of Chayil are. Take a look at source number 12 on your sheet, where Dr. Ziegler adds a reason to say that Boaz is wonderful. She makes a very interesting observation, which she applies in a couple of cases in Tanakh. But right here, it's with Boaz. She says, "Hamikra nota lechadeid et dmuyotav beemtzaut diburan." The text, scripture, sharpens the images of its figures, gives us real detail on them via their speech. "Vamifgash harishon shalano im dmut hu bederach klal beemtzaut divrei apticha shala." And usually, we are introduced to people in Tanakh when they speak for the first time. Not always, but certainly a common thing in Tanakh. So I'll pause, Dr. Ziegler, by pointing you to Boaz's first words when he is introduced in the story in chapter 2, sentence 4. V'hine Boaz bami Beit Lechem. Boaz came from Beit Lechem, vayomer lakotzrim, and he said to the harvesters, Hashem imachem, God is with you. Those are his opening words. Okay? So now go back into source number 12, where she says, and I'm going to read it in the English because I see it's 229. She says, "It is especially meaningful that the first words Boaz produces from his mouth in the story include God's name. God is with you. This hints that Boaz is a God-fearing man, animated by the name of God, which is perpetually in his head and his speech." That's what we're meant to learn about him. In fact, the Gemara talks about that, about the invocation of God's name in a greeting. Boaz is nice also. He speaks like a colleague to his field workers. These are the guys working in the field, and he greets them, "God is with you." Boaz seems to be a good man. So why is it, we'll see next week, that the Gemara is less than thrilled with Boaz? So that's where we have to go, God willing, next week. So thank you very much. And I'm glad that the phone at least kicked in, and looking forward to seeing you next week. Be well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.